What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm JR.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking, where this week we have a repeat offender. I mean, a return author. It's Terry Hayward, who appeared a few weeks back with You Belong to Us. And here we have him. This is going to be a two-week extravaganza, JR, this week and next week.
Do you know, when I listen to these, because I saved them under the titles, so I got them out of sequence, and it was only when I was halfway through this one, having heard the one that actually should have followed it, that I realised it kind of forms a sort of two-part story. So we're going to have these two in consecutive weeks.
Absolutely, and we never like to give away too much, but I'll say in this essay, I could really, really empathise with a lot of it because it seems we're only about a year apart in age, Terry and myself.
Right.
So when he's talking about being at a certain age, watching certain episodes, I'm like, yeah, that was me. That was me.
Yeah.
And it's very, very cool. And I've got to say that I didn't have any Who friends either when I was watching Trial of a Time Lord, but I did have some in my local Doctor Who club when McCoy came along, so...
Oh,
always
yes.
Good to have friends.
Yes, because this is, we shan't spoil what next week's about, but he kind of tells his own story, and this first half of it is the slightly younger Terry Hayward, mm-hmm. and then next week we'll get the slightly older Terry Hayward, but this is about, well, no, let's not say what it's about, let's say that we've said enough, and let's let Terry take the story up from here.
I concur.
My Secret Life by Terry Hayward, aged 43, born Lincolnshire in the UK. Daniel Wood was an irritating kid in the year below me at primary school. He had a whiny voice, always seemed to have a runny nose, and carried with him a faint smell of damp clothes and cheese and onion crisps. It was 1985, I was 10 years old, and Colin Baker was on screen in his first full season of Doctor Who. At the age of 10, I didn't question why I loved Doctor Who. I didn't feel the need to challenge why the Doctor was wearing a multicoloured coat. I had bright neon-coloured socks because, well, why not? As far as I was concerned, Doctor Who was cool in my world, before I'd even grasped what cool might really mean. Daniel had different ideas. I had the misfortune to be sat on a lunch table with him every single day at primary school, and much to my annoyance, he had a lunchbox adorned with the characters from popular early 80s action show, The A-Team. At the time, the Doctor was facing a big challenge from The A-Team. Whilst he was battling the Borad on BBC One, The A-Team were busy blowing up stuff and duffing up baddies on ITV at exactly the same time. This meant that most households had to choose between the more peaceful Doctor, the occasional misfortune with an acid bath aside, or the gloss and explosions of a big-budget US show. In a way, the Doctor didn't stand a chance. In the cinemas in 1985, action movies were the draw, and the A-Team provided the same type of thrills and spills for a Saturday tea-time audience. For kids, the A-Team seemed more grown up. Doctor Who, with its heavily studio-bound adventures performed in a heightened theatrical manner, with the occasional low-budget visual effect, was very much seen as a poor relation, a tatty old kids show. Daniel's particular critique of both shows had not been thought through in any depth. As far as he was concerned, the A-Team was better and Doctor Who was crap. He had a lunchbox bearing the angry face of Mr. T, for heaven's sake. Did I have a Doctor Who lunchbox? No. There weren't any. In his eyes, he was already winning. Every Monday lunchtime, I was faced with the same question. Did you see the A-team at the weekend? He knew what the answer would be. Even if my father had permitted ITV in the house, there was no way that I would ever choose Mr. T over Dr. W. Mr. T had all that gold jewellery for a start, which was surely more tasteless than the doctor's orange spats. So once he'd got his usual answer from me, Daniel would then quiz me on what I'd been watching that could possibly be any better than his beloved A-team. I would always explain that, as he was well aware, I had been watching Doctor Who. He'd then laugh at me, spluttering sandwich crumbs across the table as he derided my choice of viewing. The next 10 minutes would be spent with him explaining the most dramatic moments in the latest episode of the A-Team in an overblown fashion to anyone who would listen. I avoided eye contact and concentrated on trying to stick the straw into a pouch of Capri Sun without embarrassing myself. Of course, the other kids at the table couldn't leap to defend me. None of them watched Doctor Who either. I didn't know anybody who did apart from my friend Sean, but he'd moved schools by this point. So, whilst my fellow diners probably found Daniel to be a gloating menace, they too would most likely have been tuned into the A-team of a Saturday evening. So I kept my head down for a few years. The hiatus came and went, as did season 23, The Trial of a Time Lord. And I didn't breathe a word of my secret obsession. As I was moving into my early teens and to secondary school, I could see that Doctor Who had got a bit silly for my taste. But, with the arrival of Sylvester McCoy, not Stallone as my grandmother insisted, I hoped that the show may be on a slow road to recovery. I found a friend who watched the show. He was called Robin. He wasn't well regarded amongst his peers, as legend had it, he couldn't cope with being teased. His reputation was tainted by a story from middle school, where he'd stormed out in tears after repeatedly being called Robin Redbreast, loudly declaring, "I'm going home!" amongst the jeers and the catcalls. That sort of reputation sticks with a fella. But Robin's parents had a video recorder, and mine didn't. So I stuck my neck on the line and befriended him. This meant that I didn't have to miss episode 4 of Paradise Towers due to being on the French trip. At the end of the episode, I recall Robin pondering at length what the meaning of Pex lives actually meant. Had he survived his unimpressive fall down the lift shaft? Robin was convinced he had, myself less so. I tried to persuade him otherwise, but he had taken a very literal understanding of this brief moment and was not going to be swayed. I still picture Robin now, eagerly awaiting the next episode of Doctor Who to see if, after all these years, Pex finally reappears to save the day. Come 1988, I'd become a regular reader of Doctor Who magazine. I'd dabbled before, but struggled to find a newsagent who regularly stocked it. In the run-up to the 25th anniversary season, though, there was a bubble of noise. The Daleks were back. Then the Cybermen? It was going to be epic! Due to the Olympics of that year, the start date of season 25 was put back to October. It seemed to be an unbearable wait, but finally, in the Radio Times the week before, there was a small photo of a white and gold Dalek. Some may say these were simpler times, but that was enough to keep me in a state of unparalleled giddiness for about a fortnight. Eventually, Remembrance of the Daleks appeared on screen, and it was epic! Everything that had been wrong and silly with last year's series was gone, and now we had a proper, frightening show again. Doctor Who was back. I just knew it. To my surprise and joy, I even started to hear Doctor Who being mentioned in the school corridors, in a positive way. It had become appointment-to-view television before the phrase had been invented. In your face, Daniel Wood, where's your precious A-team now, eh? Our English teacher had given us a project of writing a speech about a subject we felt passionate about. And I had an epiphany. This was my time to reach out to my fellow pupils and convert them to the cause. I can't remember exactly what I wrote, but it was a masterclass in propaganda. It acknowledged the faults of the recent past, but then went on to overtly praise Doctor Who as if it was the greatest dramatic television show of all time. I delivered this in front of a class of around 30 of my peers, with all the passion and zeal of an evangelical preacher. I could see they were impressed, and afterwards the murmurs around the classroom were good. Doctor Who was about to rise up and take its place back in the nation's hearts. After all, Remembrance of the Daleks had just finished that week, and we were on to a new adventure, What could possibly go wrong? Joe Churchman was an unlikely viewer of Doctor Who at the best of times. It seemed strange to us boys, but he seemed far more interested in the glitz and glamour of Dynasty and Dallas than the shows we watched. However, encouraged by what I was saying about the action, adventure and high drama on offer, he tuned in the following Wednesday evening to episode 1 of The Happiness Patrol. In retrospect, part of me thinks that he should have at least respected the more camp elements of the production, but the on-screen arrival of the Candyman pushed his tolerance to breaking point. Sat in my own home, just half a mile away, I realised that my reputation at school might just take a little knock, thanks to a walking licorice all-sort man. And lo, it came to pass. My moment of looking a little on-trend glooped down the plug hole like some fondant fancy in the candy kitchen. Season 25 continued past this particular serial, but even though I tried once more to rouse the troops when Silver Nemesis came to air, the wheels had already fallen off my bandwagon. When season 26 loomed upon the horizon the following year, I was still as excited as before. After all, I loved Doctor Who with all my heart, but I'd learnt my lesson, and so I decided to keep it to myself. It was my secret passion, and I was never going to share that with anybody ever again. Well, that's until... oh, but that's another story.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.